Weekly.
Is MMO Weekly.
You know what that music means? For the first time in a couple weeks, we are back doing MMO Weekly. Welcome, welcome, welcome back, my friends. Show that comes to you once a week, every Monday, starting off your week, recapping the Hollywood week that was and the Hollyweird week to come.
And I'm here this time.
Hashtag MMO Weekly, hashtag MMOW. This is Mike, and Oscar, MMO Weekly. I am co-host Mike Wan, and yes, he's here. Also, Mike returns.
Also Mike, I was upset that I couldn't join you last weekend, though you held down the fort, did a wonderful job. You had some hot takes on the weather. You had some hot takes on the PGA Awards and Green Book. I'm here this time for the SAG Awards. We're both on cloud nine a little bit, I would say.
I said to, I don't remember who I was talking to last night, but like this award season has been so, at best, bland, and at worst, like, discouraging. And this is like the second time last night off the heels of the SAGs that I actually felt good about this year. The first time being when Glenn Close won her first one at the Golden Globes, but like Black Panther winning Best Ensemble last night at the SAG Awards.
We're hyped.
Which I'm not going to talk about. I'm here to talk about the Royal Rumble and Seth Rollins winning and the fallout from that, so... you ready?
But you're on cloud nine. You had the Royal Rumble. You had your one of your favorite movies of the year win last night.
Yeah.
And we had an awesome interview with one of your favorite comedians. You turned me onto him. And Brennan Lee Mulligan was awesome. We've been watching all of his videos. We've been listening to all of his podcasts. We've been watching Fantasy High like crazy on Dropout, College Humor's streaming service. Go subscribe to all his stuff. He's a rising star. And he gave us... one hell of an interview that I still, I mean, I've listened to it a couple times myself on our own feed, and I find something new to learn from, and something that encourages me and inspires me every time I listen.
Yeah, if that's the standard bearer for guests from now on, I think he was incredibly kind of him to give us that much of his time, and incredibly knowledgeable and in-depth. He's a very, very unique mind to kind of piece Absolutely. Through. And like, I don't know about you, but I was so inspired at the end of that. Like, he had like three or four different points where he was like, basically, go follow your dreams, kids. I was like, hell yeah, I could do anything.
I had to speak in front of a couple hundred people over the weekend at a function, and I gave my best speech ever. And I credit it to him. I credit it to him because he did. He inspired me too.
He was awesome.
But he told a lot of crazy stories. We had a ton of laughs. We were a little nervous at the beginning of the episode.
Sure.
We didn't come on like this, all talky, but we came on a little nervous, and he just put us right at ease. He told us his life story, like I said, a bunch of crazy stories, and of course we did a deep dive not only into all of his work right now with College Humor, but into the Oscar race, a lot of big picture stuff that was just awesome. So if you listen to one episode of Mike and
Surely,
Oscar,
yeah.
listen to that one. Yeah. That was fun.
That one was a lot of fun, and we hope to have him back at some point in the future. He was, again, our billion thanks to him. He was awesome. Anything happened last night?
Yeah! The SAG Awards. Mike's going to get to his Royal Rumble stuff down the line in what we're watching. But we're doing the Oscar race update right off the top here.
The Oscar goes to...
And the winner is...
And the Oscar goes to...
The winner is...
The Oscar goes to...
MMOW's Oscar Race Update.
All right, Oscar Race Update. The 2019 SAG Awards happened last night. Mike, what did we see?
This is a big deal. Black Panther wins most outstanding cast in a motion picture, otherwise known as Best Ensemble. There's no other nominations for Black Panther at the SAG Awards other than the Stunt Ensemble, which it also won. We'll get to that. But there's no Michael B. Jordan. There's nobody else in the Best Acting categories. This is a surprise win for it. It's a bit of an unprecedented win. I really didn't go into the stats of that, but my guess is it's an unprecedented win because, Michael, we have 25 years of stats, and I was able to do 25 years of stats for this award show. Are you ready here?
Yeah, lay it on me.
So three billboards won last year.
Yes.
Hidden Figures won the year before that. Spotlight the year before that in 2015. So those are the last three. They're one for three. Overall, Best Ensembles have only won 11 out of 24.
Shape of Water wasn't even nominated last year for the Best Ensemble Award and goes on to win Best Picture. So again, it's a spotty history as far as the correlation goes.
Now, that being said, Michael, a lot of the surprise Best Picture winners, like I said, only 11 out of 24 became Best Pictures. Best Ensembles became Best Pictures. But the surprise ones, Shakespeare in Love, Crash, The King's Speech over Social Network, and Spotlight. I don't remember the Spotlight year as well as some others do, but I remember being a bit surprised Spotlight winning that award. Those four recently were SAG Ensemble winners. We have a wide open Best Picture race. We have all of these nominees just with shortcomings, I would say. And why not Black Panther?
So it needed something. That's the first thing. We said going into the Critics' Choice, it badly needed to win. It didn't have anything. We said going into the BAFTA nominations, it badly needs to be recognized. It barely was. I don't think anybody really expected it to win Best Ensemble. I'm sure there are those out there that still held down the fort and held the faith, but nobody at large. There wasn't a wide swell of support for this one to walk away with Best Ensemble. I think it was an upset. It was a bit of a surprise.
And there's also a cannibalization vote where Crazy Rich Asians had a similar accomplishment in the sense that we are finally celebrating the diversity of the industry, right? We have an Asian cast for Crazy Rich Asians. We have
Megan Mullally made that joke. It was at the stop of her speech. I watched some videos this morning. Yeah. It's a fine point. I wonder, though, are we getting to a divide? Not that there wasn't one already, but are we getting to a divide where the actors are more cognizant of like social issues and the Me Too movements and what's actually going on the ground level versus the producers, the ones with money, who the stereotype is that they're the old white man in the room, and they're the ones that get these films made, and they see something like Green Book and they see no issue with it and they call it one of the greatest films of the past however many years. The actors have their chance to vote. They go with the diversity picture. They go with Black Panther, which is the record. And by the way, a $700 million domestic box office picture being an underdog is laughable, but okay. They go with Black Panther. They go with somewhat of an issue movie as well. I wonder where this is going to go in the future if actors and producers are this divided, clearly divided.
If that's the case, Michael, then the actors are going to get their way because the Academy is predominantly filled with, or there's more actors in the Academy than there are producers in the Academy.
We can only hope.
Straight up numbers. We know for a fact more actors make up the Academy. Sure. So if the actors are going for Black Panther, if all these other Best Picture candidates are feeling a blowback, I know you don't want to believe in that. It's like Santa Claus for you. But if there is...
I want to believe it. I just haven't seen it.
You haven't seen it. You're upset. Yeah. You're waiting for it.
Yeah.
If Green Book is yet to face its backlash, if Bohemian Rhapsody is yet to face its backlash, and we don't have an obvious Best Picture frontrunner like we thought A Star Is Born was going to be, like A Star Is Born should have been for this award. It had the more nominations than all these other films. It had the two actors, lead actor Bradley Cooper, supporting actor Sam Elliott, and had Best Actress Lady Gaga. By the numbers, you were thinking, all right, A Star Is Born is probably going to win because SAG, the guild, nominated it the most elsewhere.
Not to mention about A Star Is Born, like, do you think Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper are just getting sick of being exploited like they are? They're always sat up front at all of these award shows. They go home empty-handed with basically nothing. And they're just... Glenn Close won Best Actress last night. Right. She has to walk around Lady Gaga's table to get to the stage. Why seat them there if you're not going to reward them?
The wife comes later in the alphabet, the W. I don't know, Michael. It's very strange. But here's the obvious fact of it. A lot of people were predicting A Star Is Born to win. And yet again, we just keep going back to the narrative of the first kind of 10, 11 months of this award season, or I guess maybe 9 months, I would say, of this award season. A Star Is Born supposed to win. But look, Brennan Lee Mulligan said it in that interview. The Marvel Cinematic Universe is what we are going to look back as historians and judge this age of cinema.
Yeah, it's American mythology now.
We have... the age of the MCU, and we have the most successful film of the MCU so far. We have the most groundbreaking film of the MCU so far in Black Panther, even though I know, all right, fine, Infinity War made more worldwide. Domestically, it's definitely the most successful by the numbers. Why not Black Panther for Best Picture in a year where we don't have any other obvious candidates taking charge?
Well, that's kind of the question now. Does this seriously re-enter into the Best Picture discussion? There's going to be people that say yes and no. And for me, I want to believe it does. But like you just let off with, there's not a high correlation between what the SAGs usually think and what actually happens with Best Picture. There is that history that you pointed out of the wonky ones coming through in a year where it is wide open. This is a wide open year. Yep. There's certainly reason to be optimistic, and I would love nothing more than to see not Green Book, not Bohemian Rhapsody win.
Right.
I would love to see A Star Is Born at this point, which is nothing I would have said 6 months ago. I would love to see Black Panther absolutely win the Best Picture. I hope this means something more than... it may not, is where I'll land on it. I hope this is a signal of things to come.
Our Best Picture category review is going to be loaded. I'm holding back some more theories I have here. So tune in for our Best Picture category reviews. We're going to review all of the categories. And some more things got shook up, Michael. But first, Best Lead Actress seems to be Glenn Close's category
well,
now.
Well, it's well overdue, and it's well-earned. I think it's a worthy winner. I think Glenn Close was the only performance I saw all year that rivaled the Toni Collette one for
right.
me.
So and you
I
mentioned
think,
that. Back
yeah, I think that's proper. I'm a little surprised that nobody has given Lady Gaga her due, except for the Critics' Choice.
Critics' Choice with the tie, we thought maybe she was coming back. This was a fascinating race to me, the SAG Awards, because for the first time, well, not for the first time, but we now had Olivia Colman, we had Glenn
Close.
Didn't
show up again.
And we had Lady Gaga in the same category, judged for the first time,
right.
I should say, by members of the Academy. Because the critics are not, most of them are not members of the Academy unless they're, you know, the Roger Eberts of the industry. Michael, Olivia Colman doesn't show up.
No.
I can't figure out why. We're not Hollywood insiders. We don't understand.
Did they show
why.
Rachel Weisz at all? Or was Emma Stone the only one from The Favourite that seemed to be there?
I didn't see Rachel Weisz, but again, I didn't follow this one like a hawk like I usually do. Forgive us. To tease our category review, I do think it's a debate. Now, you mentioned it before, Toni Collette being a snub. You had her up there,
yes.
right? So we're going to have a debate with all the snubs factored in. We're going to have a debate within this category because we love Olivia Colman's performance. She doesn't show up at this award show, which
didn't
I wonder.
Critics' Choice. Yeah, it's odd.
She's not campaigning for it.
She only shows up at the one she's going to win.
Right.
So if she makes the red carpet, does that mean something? Obviously, that's just tongue
in
cheek.
Very strange.
Yeah.
She's going to show up for the Oscars,
yeah,
right?
Of course.
Listen, Glenn Close can run for president right now and get support. She certainly can run for Academy president and get support based on her last few speeches. This speech, I think she needed to have workshopped a bit more. She talked
yeah.
about the two eyes to two eyes. And
you can't have a wife without a husband?
I liked aspects of this speech where she's trying to say that all the screens out there are distracting us. We're getting too hung up on social media. But that's, in a very strange way, that's like an old person speech?
Well,
let's call it what it is.
I mean, I don't know that was her point about being distracted so much as it was
right.
the power of the close-up she talked about,
power
the power
of,
the looking at your eyes.
But as an audience, as a movie-going audience, Mrs. Close, we have to see that on a screen, the biggest screen possible. So I think what she was trying to get at, and I can only guess, Michael, is that she was trying to say that, you know, an audience can feel comforted. They can feel encouraged and inspired by movies, by what they see on a screen. They can heal in many ways by living vicariously through characters and the whole catharsis that happens for an audience. I mean, a movie can act as a pep talk in a way when you absorb yourself with what is on the screen. And that happens because actors are able to two eyes versus two eyes and convey those emotions and convey that experience and research that experience. But to me, the speech floundered.
Yeah, it was a weird speech. It came off very odd. And I think in 2019, where with gay marriage issues and all that, to say you can't have a wife without a husband was a really odd closer.
Yeah, I think that's a slip.
I know she wasn't thinking about it. I get that.
I think that's a slip of the tongue.
Right,
I don't think she meant it.
And again, it's got to be tough to, especially for someone like Glenn Close, who's like closer than she's probably, pun intended, I guess, closer than she's probably ever been to finally getting an Academy Award. And so these precursors go by and she keeps amassing these trophies and she's getting more and more excited. So I don't think anything she says can necessarily be held against her. It's also unfair because that Golden Globe speech was like epic.
Epic.
Yeah.
But she stuck to the feminist speech, right?
Yeah.
And she was very positive in that regard. Now she gave a speech that was more critical of a larger issue.
Well, she was, if you think about it too, she was on topic.
I don't know if it's a larger issue, but it's definitely a different issue.
So she gets rewarded by the HFPA, and she gives kind of this global speech. And she's rewarded by her fellow actors, and she gives a very actor-specific speech. And yeah, I think there is that to it. She is kind of speaking to an audience that she knows she's speaking to. So I don't knock it. I'm just glad overall that she won.
Right.
I mean, old woman speech or not, she took home the hardware, and I love it.
I think she probably felt that she was bombing a little bit. The applause was awkward when the applause finally came.
Yeah.
And she repeated herself a bunch.
Yeah.
So this was strange because we've said it before, the campaigning you do, the speeches you give, they matter in a close Oscars race. Is it going to matter at this point
for
Glenn Close?
I think it would matter more if she did it on the bigger stage. Isn't it odd that the Golden Globes are considered the bigger stage, even though they're the farthest removed from the Academy?
It kicks off award season, but you're right. It sets the narratives in many ways.
So if this speech happened at the Golden Globes, I think it would be a bigger deal because it's a bigger platform.
It would have been a bigger deal. Yeah. She may not have won the critics. So, well, I don't know what the voting windows are, but she may not have won this one.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. Michael, we had the best actor race shook up.
Yeah, so Bradley Cooper's dead, right?
Bradley Cooper.
He's got to be dead and buried now, along with Toni Collette's Oscar chances.
He is in big, big trouble. Rami Malek from Bohemian Rhapsody defeats Bradley Cooper, Christian Bale, John David Washington, and Viggo Mortensen from Green Book there. So this is a big win because Cooper needed it, like you just said.
Yeah.
And Christian Bale seemed like he took a lead after the Critics' Choice Awards.
I still think he's in the lead. I can't... Look, again, Hollywood loves when pretty people go ugly. We have two leading men that both decided to go ugly. One with the set of chompers. One by putting on all that extra weight. I just cannot possibly believe. Look, Rami Malek's performance was good.
Mm-hmm.
It's not... Neither one is Gary Oldman from last year.
Right.
Christian Bale is closer, is what I'll say.
Okay, here are some stats. And the stats you can take in either direction. Because the last 2 years, Michael, yes, they picked Gary Oldman. Obvious winner. There's a lot of obvious winners, in my opinion, over the last 15 years. You had the Daniel Day-Lewis Lincoln performance.
Mm-hmm.
You had performances like that where, to me, it was obvious, and it was obvious early on in the awards season who was winning a lot of these Oscars. The last one that was really neck and neck was Denzel Washington and Casey Affleck, and Denzel Washington won the SAG for Fences, which was the reason why he was so surprised and visibly shook.
Yeah, people thought that was gonna translate to momentum at the Academy Awards. Casey Affleck takes it.
The reason why they were so surprised is because 13 out of the last 15 SAG winners won the Oscar, Mike, and that includes this rare miss, Denzel Washington miss from Fences. Overall, 19 of the last 24 Screen Actors Guild winners became Oscar winners in the lead actor category. That's pretty good in terms of picks.
It's kind of indicative, too, of how the guilds have gone. So we have the Actors Guilds that seem to be so on the level with what happens at the Academy Awards with the actors. The Directors Guild, certainly there's a correlation between what happens in the Directors Guilds along with their Best Director category. It's funny to me that the correlation isn't as strong amongst the Producers Guild, which is, I think, is a good thing for at least me and my thoughts towards what won the Producers Guild this year. But anyway, I don't care. I don't care what the Christian Bale's performance was just better, wasn't it? Or am I crazy here?
I don't know, Michael. I was kind of thinking the same thing in the sense that Christian Bale has this thing sewn up. However, you look back at Golden Globes, Rami Malek won an award there, didn't he? He won drama and then Bale won comedy.
Sure, yeah.
At the Critics' Choice Awards, Christian Bale sweeps a little bit in the...
A little bit.
He won both the, you know, the drama, the main category.
He's half pregnant.
So, well, coming out of the Critics' Choice, Christian Bale was the favorite. However, Rami Malek, and neither of them were winning the Critics' Associations. Ethan Hawke was.
Right. Right, so this is kind of their first exposure to different areas. I get that. Look, if nothing else, it's going to be a race, which I think is what we all want.
Right,
leading up to the Academy Awards, that's great to see.
And what do you hear when you hear about criticism of Bohemian Rhapsody? You hear, no, Bohemian Rhapsody is not Best Picture, but everybody agrees.
Yeah.
That Rami Malek is awesome.
It's not going to be offensive if Rami Malek wins the Academy Award. Right. You know, it's a worthy performance. Personal preference. I don't think it's on the level of what Bale did, but okay. I'm happy for Rami Malek too, and I'm happy it's not Green Book.
It's not Green Book. Michael, supporting actress was the narrative that we thought going into the night
this category has just been fucking weird.
We thought it was going to change, right?
Yeah.
We thought Regina King was going to get a legitimate race out of another contender emerging.
Yeah.
Because BAFTA, Regina King is not nominated, and SAGs, Regina King is not nominated. Mm-hmm. This was where Emma Stone, Rachel Weisz, or Amy Adams was supposed to, you know, take their stage,
yeah,
right? And if they won both SAGs and BAFTA, now you have a race because Regina King doesn't have the momentum because she can't have the momentum. Michael, the SAGs picked Emily Blunt from A Quiet Place, which a performance we really loved, and they picked her without an Oscar nomination. She does not have an Oscar nomination.
Two things jumped out to me from this. One, obviously, we know where Scott Feinberg was hearing all the momentum for A Quiet Place, even though it bewildered us, because he had A Quiet Place on up towards the top of a couple of his lists in the Feinberg forecast.
He interviews a ton of actors. I mean, his awards chatter
podcast. We didn't understand why, and obviously, this is where it is, because Emily Blunt takes on the supporting actress SAG here. Two, the Amy Adams outrage that happened on Twitter following this is a little overblown, isn't it?
I think so.
Like, she was fine in Vice.
She's really good at the beginning of that movie. The first time we saw it together, we missed the scenes where she's great.
Yeah, she has moments, for sure. But I don't think anybody saw that film and was like, well, this category is sewn up. I felt more sure about the supporting actress category last year after watching The Big Sick. Holly Hunter in that role, and she ends up not even getting nominated at the Academy Awards. So I get the imperative that people want to see Amy Adams finally get recognition and win her Oscar and stuff. I don't think it was going to be this performance. I think that's a little overblown, the whole, this is outrageous, what more does she have to do? Well, be a supporting actress winner, I think is fair.
The narrative in award season is not there for her yet. She has not won anything, really.
No.
So why do people think she needs to win this?
Because they like her. I mean, that's the bottom line.
And that's great.
Yeah, and that is great.
So
she's a great actress.
She's always nominated. She's waiting on that first Oscar.
Yeah.
And that's the big thing. Like, she's won Globes. She's won SAGs in a Best Ensemble, even though she hasn't won an individual award there yet. So she's won stuff in precursors before,
right,
and then got shut out at the Oscars. So there's that, you know, imperative to get her something down the line.
She's going to win. She will win an Oscars at some point.
Well, Glenn Close was going to win one for 10 years there.
She's going to win this year, God willing.
Finally.
You hear me, Gaga?
Finally.
Glenn Close is going to win.
Michael, some stats real quick. Overall, the SAGs have picked 18 out of 24 Best Supporting Actress Oscar winners.
See them make it 19 after this year.
Yeah, let's see it. Do you think the BAFTAs could still mint a new contender for Regina King? Or, but if you're a Regina King fan, this is what you wanted.
Yeah, this was like best case scenario.
You wanted Robbie or Emily Blunt because they're not nominated at the Oscars. If Emma Stone won this and Emma Stone won BAFTA, then you got an issue. Now you got momentum for Emma Stone.
It sounds so simplistic, but I am surprised that Emma Stone putting on the accent capably like she did throughout The Favorite didn't get her more love amongst her fellow actors.
By far the most screen time. A lot of range
I classify her as a lead in that movie.
I wonder if the narrative is she's already gotten an Oscar.
Could be. We don't know. could be a billion things, right?
Because they're close. I think they're close performances. We're gonna have fun breaking down this category for you soon.
And we've said how the favorite ladies might be cannibalizing each other, and that very well could have happened here. Maybe they finished 2-3, whereas only one of them could have ran and gotten the SAG here, and then we do have Regina King's biggest opposition.
And again, Rachel Weisz already won an Oscar, so. You know, it makes some sense. Emily Blunt had a great year. I saw some theories online saying that this was kind of due to the fact that she was also nominated for Best Actress from Mary Poppins Returns, that this was kind of one of those dual nomination things. It makes some sense that she got some love here. We also think it makes some sense because she had an awesome turn as that badass mom in A Quiet Place. I rewatched it. Her performance is just as good upon rewatch. That might have been a snub at the Oscars.
Usually when someone is on the ballot, they aren't, when they're on the ballot twice and they get kind of the award of like, we don't want to vote for them in this category, so let's give them this category. It's not two acting categories. It's usually a movie that's kind of dividing something up on the card and getting something lower on the card instead. Right. So it's kind of rare to see that if that's the thinking that brought Emily Blunt to a SAG win here for supporting actress because people felt bad about not voting for her for Best Actress. I don't think that would be the case because there wasn't a lot of momentum for Mary Poppins.
You would think it would work against her.
Right. Well, I don't think it came into play is what I'm saying. I think she won this on her merits as opposed to like the backup plan, if that makes any sense.
Very strange because she's not nominated at the Oscars. I keep coming back to that. You know, a lot of the same people are in the Academy not nominating her for an Oscar for this performance where that same narrative could have worked out, but it works out here differently. Very strange.
Yeah.
Michael, supporting actor, we now have not only a front runner, but a likely winner at the Oscars.
This is over.
Mahershala Ali from Green Book.
And it's rightfully over. As soon as we saw that movie, all the problems aside, you could take all the problems in with it, I mean, and you could take everything that happened within the movie, outside the movie. Mahershala Ali is the standout from this. He is a well-deserved and well-earned winner of this award, and I think he's going to go on to win the Oscar, and he should.
We mentioned that he was our number one back during that OSP, and he's still our number one probably now. Best Supporting Actor category will be, we'll have to put on our tinfoil hats and really get into some conspiracy theories. So that'll be an exercise in oratory, as you so love when we break that one down. Right now he is 3-for-3. Going into some stats here, Michael. Idris Elba won the SAG for Beasts of No Nation in 2015. I was shocked to learn that. And that was like where a lot of the outrage had come after
the Oscar So White controversy.
Yeah, because this guy wins the SAG. Right. And he doesn't even get nominated for the Oscar. We just saw it happen with Emily Blunt this year. So that made some sense. Otherwise, they got 4 out of the last 5 Oscar winners right at SAG. Overall, they whiffed on most of the early 90s and most of their early years.
That's how it is for a lot of these award shows. Where the Critics' Choice, you can go back and look at those too. The early years, it's just very odd. Obviously they don't know what they want it to be, and I think it took them time to kind of establish themselves as one of the big four precursors.
Establish their standards in
a
way.
So
they're 15-for-24 overall. Those are the other than Ensemble, which was 11-out-of-24. This is the worst carryover.
Who's number two right now? I mean, number one, that seems to be all shut, right?
Richard E. Grant.
Up.
Yeah, I would probably, if there was a silver Oscar, Richard E. Grant probably wins it. Chalamet's not in the field, even though we would maybe argue that his performance was pretty awesome. To finish up here, Michael, stunt ensemble, and we just gushed over Black Panther. We're trying to big up Black Panther as a potential Best Picture candidate.
Please.
We want it to win Best Picture, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
Mission Impossible Fallout is by far the best stunt ensemble, maybe of the decade.
You had a mini Twitter campaign of your own, of a one-man Twitter campaign on this last night that I was following. And I don't think you're wrong. I also am not outraged because, yes, Mission Impossible Fallout, better stunts, without question. I don't think this is a bad thing, though, because it's only got to help Black Panther's Best Picture cause, right?
Okay, the results of it, it's a good thing for Black Panther. Yes, I agree with you, it's a good thing for Black Panther, but why don't we just, like, nominate 5 movies or 5 casts or five things. Why do we put them into categories?
Oh, you silly, silly man. Should it ever be that simple?
Yeah, why do we put them into categories and say, this is the best of this, and this is the best of that? Because clearly, Tom Cruise is jumping out of planes. Yes. He's free solo climbing famous mountainous cliffs that are straight up.
That was Mission Impossible 2, wasn't it?
No, he climbed up the cliff at the end of that movie, okay. Mike. Yeah, okay. He's free soloing it. He's climbing up helicopters in flight and then doing stunts when the thing is in flight.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Helicopters are literally crashing into each other with practical effects involved, and one fight is better than the next. One chase scene is better than the next. He's jumping across buildings and breaking his ankle, still getting up and running. What more does he have to do?
Can I put on my tinfoil hat for a second?
Sure.
There is a lot of backlash, especially amongst actors, for the Church of Scientology.
Yes.
Against the actors that are part of the Church of Scientology.
I was going to be afraid to mention that. I don't know. Like, it's not standing out to me why. That's what I would guess.
Yeah.
But we're not journalists, so don't quote us on that. You said it.
You can quote me.
All right. You think that's what it is. I'm not sure.
I will fight anybody at any... No, guess.
I'm not sure.
Obviously, it's speculation.
So they hold grudges for 10 years. This guy's doing the most spectacular stunts on his own as a movie star.
The way I think about it isn't directly related to Tom Cruise. It's like, okay, he's the representative of that church. Maybe I'm actor X and I know actor Y, and actor Y is part of that group, and I don't like actor Y, so I can't vote for the head of that group. You know, it could be one of those things that spiderwebs itself. Your point is well taken, but you could even extrapolate that more in that Mission Impossible Fallout was one of the highest graded movies of the year for us.
Right.
And again, it had no chance of ever making the Best Picture field. So there's a lot of things that
you think the Screen Actors Guild is saying, let's give Black Panther momentum before the Oscars. That's in the backs of their mind throughout this whole ballot.
No, it's interesting. I think the Screen Actors Guild, and again, it's speculation, I think they're saying we don't want to vote for anything that's not a serious quote-unquote contender.
So pick Emily
so
Blunt.
So let's... well, at least at the undercard award. Emily Blunt's a favorite. She's an Academy favorite.
That was a good argument until...
That's a fair counter-argument. But I don't think they want to reward something that's seen as just purely an action movie, even though Mission Impossible Fallout clearly is more than an action movie.
I think they are out of their goddamn minds.
Yeah, I would agree.
Well, let's say this. If they approach this seriously, they're out of their minds. If they are making a stand against the religion of Scientology based on this award, then okay, I understand it, and I can even respect it a little bit, because I think we have our problems with some organized religions, especially that one. We'll be honest, we're not squirrels. No, don't think we're squirrels, and don't come after us, Scientologists. But
I am a god.
Well, listen. All right, we got to take one side or the other. Nobody sits on a fence like Mike, and Oscar, as you've said. I tried to sit on a fence again. You pushed me back off. Okay, all right, fine. We're not believers in the Church of Scientology. Michael, Black Panther has a lot of CGI worked in. Now, they also worked in some practical effects, which we praised it over, especially in South Korea.
Yeah, I don't want to be misconstrued either. We're not saying the effects and the stunt work in Black Panther isn't awards worthy.
It's really good. It probably wins in a lot of other years where Mission Impossible
is not in. It's just that Fallout was mind-blowing.
Mind-blowing.
Yeah. So that's
really happening.
Yeah.
And the cameras are close up, just like Free Solo was up close with those cameras. We know it's all real. We know it's all real. We know it's all real. So what the fuck are we doing, Screen Actors Guild? You obviously hold a grudge.
But is it real? Yeah, no, you're
it's
right.
real.
You're
this
right.
is not real. This is half real. This is mostly fake in Black Panther. We know that.
Your excitability for some of the undercard categories, obviously some of which aren't even going to make the Academy Awards.
Well, here's
such as best stuff.
Michael, it frustrates me.
I get you. I hear you.
Because they do the popularity contest thing, they do the pandering thing, and they don't award the best stunt ensemble of the year. They don't award the best documentary feature of the year. They don't award Tom Cruise for climbing the highest building in the world a few years ago during the Mission Impossible
and
4.
And in a more meta conversation, if you take that approach where you're trying to be half popularity contest, half serious award show, you're going to find yourself at some point mired in this muck of we don't know what to do and everything we do is wrong, like the Academy has done. Because when you don't take a stand and you don't play it convincingly, like, yes, we're an award show that's going to reward the best in the industry. Yes, we're a popularity contest that's going to go by the fans and blah, blah, blah.
Yes, we need ratings, but yes, we have an aesthetic taste. Yeah,
you're going to become that's this amorphous blob that just is going to be begging for people's criticism from all angles. Like the Academy Awards are right now.
And we have been criticizing the Academy for being a bit clueless. And again, we come back to Brendan Lee Mulligan, whose, you know, speech you were in a way paraphrasing there, because he said all of that in one quick sentence, that they're half populist and half art house. They're trying to thread the needle between the two.
Which is, I think, it might be an impossible task. It might be.
Yeah, it's paradoxical.
Yeah.
It's paradoxical, or you're trying to award it some over here and some over there, and this is the sum over there. Like
Gary Oldman reciting Shakespeare with the USC marching band playing in the background. You know, you can't have it both ways.
This is embarrassingly wrong, in my opinion.
It's bad. It's not a good look.
Objectively wrong and embarrassing.
I don't know if I would say objectively wrong. I don't know that I would call it embarrassing because, again, Black Panther stunts on its merits, I think,
are good. They win in other years. They don't win against Mission Possible Fallout. Yeah. I think that's embarrassing.
Okay, fair enough. That's the SAGs recap. We're going to see, again, we only have one stop left on this precursor trail. We've done the Golden Globes. We've done the Critics' Choice.
Big stop, yeah.
SAGs are in the rear view. Yeah, only one more of the four big precursors left on the schedule. That's going to be the BAFTAs, which take place only a week before the Academy Awards. Yeah. So by that point, the votes are already going to be calculated anyway. We're just kind of in it for a ride. If anything, it might just give us a peek into what will happen the following Sunday.
True. DGAs, WGAs will have coverage of that for you as well. The rest of the guilds, this is kind of the guild stage. The rest of the guilds will chime in, but you're absolutely right. The next biggie is the BAFTAs alliteration. Michael,
good job.
We have some audience interaction.
Yeah, just a couple audience interaction things. I was left to my own devices. You weren't here to edit me last week, so I came up with my own 6 degrees. I was pitched my own 6 degrees on a rock, paper, scissors theme because I am a moron. We had Tatum O'Neill, the youngest Academy Award winner ever, who won her Academy Award for Paper Moon, going to The Rock, Paper Rock, by way of Annette Bening, star of the indie film Running with Scissors in 2006.
So you made it hard on people, and I figured we were going to get one response. It's going to be Neb is Ben, maybe two responses, your brother, and no. But no, we got a lot of responses.
We did.
We're really impressed with all of you. Great job. We're going to only mention a few because we're pressed on time today. Tatum O'Neill in Paper Moon. This is Dare Daniel Movie Podcast at Dare Daniel Pod on Twitter. Tatum O'Neill in Paper Moon with Ryan O'Neill in Zero Effect with Bill Pullman, who played an American president. president.
You can see why this was a winner.
Starred Annette Bening. Annette Bening was in What Planet Are You From with Nora Dunn. Nora Dunn is in Southland Tales with The Rock, and he throws a boom on it.
Yeah, so I like when you quote, he played American president in the movie The American President, and going O'Neill to O'Neill at the top there. That was very well done.
I want somebody to just say he's a human being, and who also a human being.
Just bring it down to the base level, the reduction level.
If you get stumped and you make me laugh in the middle of it, I will give you credit for that. Just FYI, we just recognize funny stuff.
The other winner this week, Yasna at YCAVIERES. I'm not going to attempt to pronounce that because I would only say it wrong. Tatum O'Neill was in The Runaways with Kristen Stewart, who was in Still Alice with Julianne Moore, who of course won the Academy Award, who was in The Kids Are All Right with Annette Bening, which was an Academy Award nominated endeavor there, who was in Mars Attacks with Jack Black. I actually had to go look up that Jack Black was in Mars Attacks because I didn't remember that.
I don't remember
him being in that. That's from way back in the day. Jack Black, obviously, in Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle with Dwayne Johnson, a.k.a. The Rock. And even more than that, Yasna put a gif at the bottom of this response of the Macho Man, Randy Savage, saying, you don't have to like it, you just got to deal with it. And I have a rule of thumb that's very important to my heart. Anytime you answer anything I ask you with a gif of the Macho Man, Randy Savage, you are correct. And so, Yasna, congratulations on the win. Mike, you want to set him up with a game this week?
Okay, so we're going to stick with the supporting categories.
Yes.
Mahershala is about to win his second supporting actor.
And if this is what jinxes him, it's for a good cause, at
least. Yeah. We went back through the best supporting actress winners, and we picked somebody who won a couple. This was Shelley Winters.
Yes.
Diary of Anne Frank, A Patch of Blue. She was also in A Place in the Sun, The Poseidon Adventure, Double Life, The Night of the Hunter, Lolita, Alfie, and Pete's Dragon. Michael, we're going from Shelley Winters to Mahershala Ali. We're trying not to jinx him, but maybe we are because we like to be entertained. I don't know. No, we love Mahershala. But this is fitting. Supporting categories were the most puzzling this week with the supporting actress. Let's go from Shelley Winters to Mahershala Ali. Two different eras once again make it hard on you.
I think it's going to be, it could be easy. There was a, I won't give it away. It's going to take a little research on your part, but there is a TV show, a relatively modern sitcom that Shelley Winters had a guest role on that might be a link to some more recent
might
stuff.
Might be. Yeah, it's still different eras, though.
It is.
Even
it's
that's...
not a layup, but it should... You got your work cut out for
Nev
you.
Nev is Ben is just scoffing at us right now. He also had a good response, but we've been reading him
can't
too much.
Can't feature him every week. So there you go. Shelley Winters to Mahershala Ali. That is your challenge for next week's Mike, and Oscar Weekly. Winners will get their answers divulged, analyzed, and dissected on next week's MMOW. Let's go into what the top of the show usually is, but we're doing it at the bottom of the show because we are weird.
This is what we're watching. I just made up a drop.
That's going to have to be our drop from now on. I have to isolate that and use it. Yeah. So let's talk about what we're watching because Mike's got to get this off his chest.
It's like a month stuff that I've been watching, and I was averaging 4 or 5 things a week. So yeah, I got like 20 things. I'm going to rip through them fast. I'm going to talk like I'm an auctioneer on an ad for pain medication. That has all these side effects.
I'm gonna give you just like one-liners of things that I know you'll disagree with, just to see if you can get past them without
derail me. Michael, what they had? This is the Michael Shannon Hillary Swank movie. Look, what they had was the perfect place to end the movie. And then,
good job.
And then the movie went on for another 30 minutes. I really enjoyed some scenes in this. Elizabeth Chomko can certainly direct. I'm looking for big things out of her. Great scenes. Awkward plot structure. Should have ended, like I said, much earlier.
Bar owner, Dad.
Yeah, that's in there. The Mule, Michael. Diane Weiss' dialogue is so unforgivable. One might say it's unforgiven.
That's bad.
In a Clint Eastwood movie. To give that dialogue to such an actress of her caliber is thoroughly disqualifying for this movie. Otherwise, it's an okay movie. It's what
herself has also won a couple Academy Awards for Best Supporting Actress as well, Diane Weiss.
Yes. And her dialogue was just oh my God. It enraged me where if I did not eat chicken fingers before that movie, if I did not eat chicken fingers and fries before that movie, I would have just stormed out. I was eating my chicken fingers and fries. Mike, The Oath is the winner for Deus Ex Machina of the Decade Award.
Oh, wow. All right.
It was going pretty well. And then just what happens?
So anyway, The Oath is the Ike Barinholtz one, right?
This is Tiffany Haddish, yeah. Ike Barinholtz. They're arguing at the dinner table. Oh, my God. It goes off the rails. It has a hard time going between comedy and, like, serious drama, and I had any issues with it. The Miseducation of Cameron Post took me 3 watches to get through.
That's not a good sign.
I'm not a big fan of it. I think it's saying good things. It's another one of those movies, says good things. I'm not a fan of the structure of the movie. I call them like I see them, folks. It was a rough watch for me.
Speaking, I think it should be nominated for Best Picture. Keep
speaking
going.
Of rough watches, Wildlife with Jake Gyllenhaal and Carey Mulligan was perhaps the most excruciating watch of the year. I just hated myself. I hated the 1950s. I hated humanity. I hated white people. I hated married people. I hated the life. The life I have and the life I saw on screen here. Because it was just so, so soul-crushing.
It made me feel good about myself.
No.
I'm just saying things I know you'll disagree with.
You're what?
I didn't
what?
See this.
Rough movie. It's well made. And it's well acted. It's just such a downer. Oh my God, A Parade of Sadness. The Hate U Give, also A Parade of Sadness. Unforgivably bad dialogue. Some of the worst dialogue of the year.
I think it should be nominated for screenplay.
On the nose dialogue. The performances are pretty good. They elevate the dialogue in some scenes. I'm not as much of a fan of this movie. Maybe my expectations were way too high. There's a great song in here that I actually thought was going to get nominated after I watched the movie. The plot is filled with serious things. It's hard to take the leap to the next act of the plot because a lot of crazy things happen all at the end. Now, these crazy things are true stories, many of them, that have happened in real life. To put them all in one movie, though, composite all that, it doesn't work in plot structure. This is just me as a film critic. And people are going to be enraged at this review more than anything else because a lot of people love The Hate U Give. Mm. Not me. I'm sorry. I'm honest with you. I don't care if you loved it. There are easy problems to pick apart there. And Blaze, Michael.
It's the greatest movie I've ever seen.
Blaze, directed by Ethan Hunt. This is perhaps... Ethan Hunt from Mission Impossible,
yeah.
Or Ethan Hawke.
Tom Cruise's alter ego made a movie?
Blaze, directed by Ethan Hawke, starring Ethan Hunt. No, this is perhaps the most boring movie in 10 years.
I was on the edge of my seat.
I was snoring during this movie. The music sucks. If you like this music, then fucking get away from me. Get away from me. There's no wonder why he didn't make it as a musician.
I wanted
because
to
nominate him
for his best original
like
score.
Because he sings like me, but if I drank a whole bottle of Jack Daniels before I started singing. I mean, this guy had issues, and I understand why he had issues. He was a talented songwriter, and I understand why people love his songs. I perfectly understand why he did not become a big hit musician, because the guy can't sing, unfortunately.
I listen to it before I go to sleep every night.
The wedding shot is one of my favorite shots of the year. But it took all my willpower to make it through this film because I wanted to turn this one off after like 20 minutes.
I don't think I've even heard of that one. I don't even have a one-liner for
Blaze?
It. No. The wedding shot. The wedding shot is not its own movie.
The wedding shot.
In Blaze.
Okay. Is gorgeous. It's right. Slow motion. There's like this effect going on where it's beautiful. They have this wedding in the woods, and there's all these flowers thrown in the air, all these people jumping in the air. It is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. So those are my negative reviews.
Okay.
If you didn't notice. I have some positive reviews. I did not watch the most recent episode of True Detective, but so far, True Detective Season 3, it is a slow burn. Mahershala is so good.
I haven't started watching it yet, but I'm going to.
He is so good. He's pulling off the old guy. He's playing three different characters of the same guy.
Oh, really?
Huh. But he's playing three different versions of this guy's life, past, present, and future. Carmen Ejogo is awesome in it. I love the cast. I'm in for these slow burns. So if you're upset that something crazy hasn't happened yet, and don't tell me what happened last night, if you're tweeting at me today until I get home later on and I'm able to watch it, but I'm in for True Detective Season 3. A lot of callbacks kind of to that first season in the way they're handling some of the overall plot structure. I'm in. Michael, love Gilda. About Gilda Radner, SNL comedian, all-time legend on stage and screen. This documentary is now on CNN. I've watched it twice.
CNN's putting out some decent stuff.
Three Identical Strangers and Love Gilda, yeah. Both CNN productions. And this is a fun documentary, and it's a sad documentary, and it's a tribute, and it makes a lot of sense to today's world, a lot of carryovers. Bottom line, you know, I want to be entertained when I watch a documentary like this. I want to feel something, and you get both. It works emotionally. It works in terms of entertainment. It's on CNN On Demand, Michael. The last one I'm going to talk about before something I think we both watched was the Bill Murray Stories. A bit overproduced as a documentary, but the subject matter is just so entertaining and engrossing. And you want to know if these Bill Murray stories are real. They got the picture on the poster is Bill Murray's head on the Sasquatch, the famous Sasquatch, walking across the woods, the shot, and it's like animated. So this is really fun. This is really cool.
Would have been funny if it was just a tongue-in-cheek joke and they had this big intro and they just cut to Bill Murray and he just said it's all fake. And then that was it. Credits roll.
But this is so obviously staged. Like I said, it's overproduced.
Yeah.
And these are not actors. Like, this documentarian is not an actor. And I feel like I'm reading his bad acting where he's like starting a take. Like, we've done it before on the podcast. We're not actors either. And he's just like forcing something to be said. And a lot of these people are telling him the stories are not actors.
Right.
You got to get them more comfortable. So the documentary has its flaws, but the subject matter is a lot of fun. Michael, we both watched Fire on Netflix about if the Fyre Festival?
Bird Box got 45 million views in its first week. Fyre has to have doubled it, because this has been... I don't think I know anyone on social media, even those people that I don't know, that follow us or that we follow on social media, that haven't tweeted about this or posted about this somewhere.
This was pretty interesting, right? I think it was like watching a car crash.
Fascinating.
But, you know, this guy was a total shyster. And
I could think of a couple of SH words to describe him as.
Criminal. And yet this is somehow a fun documentary. And again, the subjects are performing for the camera a little bit, which I think has got to be a documentarian's number one thing. Like, I got to either do a Fincher style interview where it's like all day, so I get you at ease and you actually tell me truths.
Right.
If I just interview you for 10 minutes, you can put on a performance or a facade.
Here's what I'll say. Did you watch the Hulu one?
I did not watch the Hulu one.
So the Netflix one, I don't know if you know this, but the Netflix one, I guess, was done by F. Jerry Media.
Okay.
Who are the marketing department hired by Billy McFarland to promote Fyre Festival on social media. Okay.
So they are cleansing themselves.
This
of their
is the Netflix
folly.
One is there like, oh, it was all Billy's idea. The Hulu one. So it's a worthwhile watch. I was fascinated by it.
The Hulu one's like, no, you all fucked up.
More of that. And they did actually get Billy McFarland to sit down for an interview for it.
Really?
So it's I would watch them both if you can. They're both are worthwhile, but they are, I absolutely agree with what you said, fascinating watches. I have been obsessed with the Fyre story since its inception, because it is just mind-blowing to me that people are so willing in this day and age to put their 100% trust for their safety and well-being into these entities that are completely made up, essentially, with no proof that they can handle this. So yeah, I the Fyre Festival documentaries were just wild for me.
All right, so that was my list, Michael. You have your own list.
Yes, I watched a lot.
I'm going to derail you now.
I watched a lot of WWE Network.
Sorry.
Watched the Royal Rumble last night. That was long. It was like a 7-hour endeavor.
It's all right, but you said you enjoyed it, though, right?
Listen, I've been with wrestling too long to stop now. I'm basically an addict. Like, I can't. It's just so painful at times, but I have to watch to see what happens. Yeah. It was fun. But it was 7 hours.
Now, this is year two of Oscar movie saturation.
Yes.
And going back to wrestling, which dramatically is very simple, right?
Better. Yeah. No.
Let's just say it's very archetypal.
Yes.
Let's just say.
Yes.
It's archetypal.
I don't appreciate your tone.
This is me totally being a snob here. I wonder if being an Oscar snob and being a wrestling fan is starting to conflict.
Different brains. I'm able to just enjoy the stupidity of wrestling without criticizing it.
You enjoy it.
I'm like, yay.
You think Oscars and sports, we both love
both. Right, right. I mean, there is, if I want to nitpick. See, if you nitpick wrestling, though, it's like it falls apart very quickly. So you can't do it. I actually, as far as movies go, though, I've got a list of 20 that I've watched in the month. I'm trying to hit at least one a day that I can. Obviously,
nice.
I'm falling short. But I got anything. The first one I watched of the year was Devil Wears Prada, Table 19, MacGruber, The Heat, Game Night, Beautiful Boy, Sherlock Holmes, Molly's Game, Thoroughbreds, RBG, Wakefield, Attack the Block, If Beale Street Could Talk, Halloween, Super Troopers 2, Fyre, Greatest Festival That Never Was, Tully, Fyre Fraud, A Stupid and Futile Gesture. That's the list I have right now. Some of them I've already watched once. Some of them I've commented on previously. The highest graded one of that group for me, because I'm trying to use your inspiration to keep a running tally and grades of what I do.
Join in on my neuroses.
Exactly. Your words, not mine. The highest graded one I have is Beautiful Boy. It's the best movie I've seen this year.
Cool.
Molly's Game, I was really enamored with, and I think I'm just a Sorkinite, because he gets dialogue so beautifully
it's
in everything
he does.
It's
a fascinating story. I almost
really
bought
is.
The audiobook recently,
yeah,
too.
It really is. The lowest grade, the Heat didn't do it for me. I just did not like The Heat.
So
I didn't
this
think it
is
funny.
This is not Heat, the Michael Mann movie.
No.
This is The Heat with Sandra Bullock.
Correct,
and,
yeah.
Okay.
And as far as Michael Mann, I got halfway through the Miami Vice movie, and I stopped watching the Miami Vice movie.
Yeah, that's not a great movie. I know Bill Simmons loves it.
I know. That's why he was commenting on it. He was like saying how much he defends it the other day on one of his podcasts. So I'm like, oh, I'll give it a shot.
And I think he's a fan of the music of the movie. Like, he liked the Audio Slave music.
That's good.
Music. I don't
it's
know.
Not a great.
When I was younger, book. I liked Audio Slave for like an album. In high school.
I thought you were going to say for like an hour.
No, like one album was kind of crazy. They were rocking there for a while, but that music's too repetitive for me. I don't know. I can't get into it.
Yeah, all right. Big. So that was a month pent up worth of what we've been watching. Just a couple quick segments for you before we wrap this up here. We'll do a quick box office update right now. Not a whole lot of news shaking the earth as far as box office goes. M. Night Shyamalan's Glass is still number one in theaters, last check.
Right, it's 73 domestically now off a $20 million budget, 162 worldwide, so that's already made a lot of money. We have not seen it yet. We're still consumed with 2018 films.
Polarizing.
I'm going to wait till video comes out. I got 38%. I'm going to watch it, but I have no like sense of urgency to go to AMC. Like, I'm not even using my pass to go and see it. I'd rather rewatch Roma a couple times.
AMC's got you. They got you in the palm of their hands.
Yeah, but I'm not going. Well, not yet. No, exactly. Now they're making money. The Upside, the Kevin Hart, Bryan Cranston film, the remake of The Intouchables, the foreign French film that I liked back when it was up for Best Foreign Film, that is still making money. $63 million domestically, Michael, $12 million last weekend, $69 worldwide. Kevin Hart, amidst controversy, comes out with the number one movie of that week, beating Aquaman. Basically, all the Kevin Hart fans are like, no, we are still Kevin Hart fans. We're going to his movie, period, after the Oscar controversy.
Despite poor reviews, 39% on Rotten Tomatoes for that one, but it does have an 88% audience score. Its January release date really was like a red flashing warning sign for me, why I've kind of stayed out of the way of talking about it much and don't have that much interest in it, despite what seems to be on paper a great cast. Cranston's great. Kevin Hart can pull off a performance when he needs to. Nicole Kidman's involved in it, so... I don't know. I don't know that I'll ever get around to seeing this one, to be honest.
So, Michael, Aquaman is now over $1 billion, well over $1 billion. It's $1,090,754,074 at the box office. We think they're going to make an Aquaman 2 now.
Yeah, safe to say? I think that's safe to say, yeah, Aquaman. So DC has at least one male superhero / protagonist they can bank on. Margot Robbie just came out this morning on Instagram in full Harley Quinn makeup, taking a selfie, saying, "Did you miss me? HQ." So that's underway, and she's back in the fold there. Really excited to see Birds of Prey come out. Really excited to see what Wonder Woman has in store for us.
Absolutely.
So.
A couple quick ones, Mike. Spider-Verse is holding really well, up to $338 million worldwide off a $90 million budget.
That it's going to be a shame when it doesn't win the Oscar, though.
Oh, no. That was number five last week. Green Book has been charging forward. It kind of fell off the map, and then it's coming back now with all the awards.
Don't underestimate the old white men that want to see an afternoon picture.
Well, it's $5 million last weekend was a strong showing, and it's now up to $59 million worldwide off a $23 million budget. That's heading towards profitability. Michael, Serenity debuted to only $4.8 million. Escape Room is over $47 million domestically on a $9 million budget, $76 million worldwide. So Escape Room, as one of those small budget horror films, really worked out financially.
It's got okay reviews, according to the Tomato Meter, too. It's a 5.3 average critic score out of 10 for a horror movie. That's not terrible. 3.5 average audience rating. Again, not terrible. Serenity, which we actually had interest in the preview, kind of looked kind of interesting, at least from where we stood. Awful reviews.
Adnan Virk of the Cinephile podcast on ESPN did a hilarious interview with Matthew McConaughey, who's telling stories about Lone Star, and he's talking about Serenity. And yeah, Serenity was a movie we wanted to see. Critics came down on it, but then you listen to Adnan Virk talk with McConaughey, now I want to see it again. It's I don't know.
Maybe. It's another thing. It's got a great Jason Clark, Matthew McConaughey.
But it's a bit DOA here.
Anne Hathaway's in it, Diane Lane. So yeah, interesting.
Mary Poppins Returns, not doing great. The Favorite got a little bit of a bump. Bohemian Rhapsody in theaters, also coming out on video, still making money. Vice, you know, If Beale Street Could Talk, not doing great. So the Oscar bumps haven't really been working for too many people beyond Green Book.
Okay. That's my input.
Mike, some Do You Care stuff.
Yeah, let's talk quick about Do You Care. Do You Care segment. This is the segment where we take news stories of the week and ask each other if we should we or do we care about them. What do we got, Mike?
Last week's releases, we already mentioned a few of them. The Kid Who Would Be King.
Getting high marks, high review marks across all the, I can't believe it.
That's so insane for me. But if it's a fun kids movie, all right, maybe.
I think it's Andy Serkis' kid that's the director, so he's at the helm of it.
Not for us, though. Mm-hmm. The Kid Who Would Be King?
Probably not.
Serenity, like we just said, we weighed in on that. Michael Never Look Away is going to start making its way to theaters. It's already in one theater now. It's going to move to us. We want to see that, baby. Do you care?
Yeah, I mean, it's a surprise at the Oscar noms, right? So I think we kind of owe it to ourselves to see.
Got
to
see that cinematography, right?
Got a surprise cinematography nom, so yeah, of course.
And then Stan and Ollie is finally expanding. I think I care about this one. Do you care enough to see it in theaters? You don't have the childhood attachment.
Yeah, right? It's not. I don't care.
It didn't get nominated for much of anything, really. So, all right, next week's theatrical releases.
Yeah, what do we got here? All right, let me open the tab and sound like a professional here for a minute. Miss Bala-Mike is coming out, apparently. Do you care?
I like the original. I liked it.
Didn't even know this was a remake.
This is another remake of a foreign film. I love Gina Rodriguez. She was awesome in Annihilation.
She's a badass.
And this trailer looks pretty on the nose to me. And Miss Bala was very much a small independent film, not a lot of action in it, some action, not a lot of action, the foreign film, and now it's like this action spectacular where she's an action hero, so I don't understand that necessarily. It's not really a close adaptation. Arctic Mike, this is Mads Mikkelsen. He just came out with a murder mystery.
Yeah, you had one of the greatest dad jokes of all time on Twitter last night.
Called Polar. Mads, don't you get cold?
Ba-dum-bum! Nailed it!
I thought it was the same movie. He's in Arctic. He's in Polar. They both come out at the same time in the middle of winter. This poor bastard's just outside freezing. Unless he's in Hollywood and the snow's fake. But I don't think that's the case. I think they're on location.
Arctic looks interesting. It also has a relatively high, but an 83% tomato meter right now on 18 reviews, only 3 negative reviews. Of course, that could mean people that were involved with the studio or just like the cold.
Don't know how to respect critics anymore. We have to figure this out, Michael. And we have to get to the bottom of it. Those are the Do You Care segments. We got some news of the week real quick.
Yeah, without the drop, because I don't think we have that much to add to it, but we just wanted to say that we obviously there were big stories. We recognize them. We're going to see what they have left. But the Atlantic had an article about Bryan Singer and his accusers, and this is just fresh off the heels of the studio coming out. I forget which studio it was, but saying that he's going forward as the Red Sonja director for that property, which is just disgusting.
Allegations in the press being made against him from
what does it take
primary sources multiple primary yeah. sources claiming that he molested and raped Ugh. Them when they were younger. That article is disgusting.
Fuck you, dude, honestly.
I mean, again, you know, this has got to play out in the courts. They got to, I don't know if there's a statute of limitations. Bottom line is we don't know right now, but we are shook after reading that article, and it's insane that his movie, even though he got fired from that movie, is now a contender at the Academy Awards.
With no backlash anywhere to be seen, and he's getting more work done in Hollywood. And we keep saying how it's kind of on the audiences, and it's going to be on us to either to support anything he does or actually fight for his right to be in the public eye like this. And right now, obviously, the studios think he's capable of it. I won't be seeing anything he does. I can tell you that for sure.
It's a quagmire. But Rami Malek is doing gymnastics in terms of his interviews and trying not. I mean, I feel bad for the guy. You know, he had to deal with Singer's direction for a while, and they butted heads. That was well known. We talked about that controversy in the Bohemian Rhapsody OSP.
Maybe that aspect is saving Malick's awards chances, too, that he seems to be someone that wasn't a fan of his anyway.
Right.
But the allegations in the article and just believe victims. So we keep saying that here. We keep saying it and saying it, that you can't go through not waiting for things to be sorted out in the courts, because usually they never are, sadly. And I have a firsthand experience with some of that stuff, and it's disgusting and gross and slimy. You got to believe victims, and the way to believe victims is to not let this guy, if you do believe victims, you do believe he's done this stuff, don't support him.
There's definitely a lot of smoke here. On that note, Michael Jackson, there's a documentary coming out about him. It's coming out on HBO, Michael. It's premiering at Sundance right now, I believe. And Michael Jackson is going to have two accusers two former children accuse him of rape and molestation for years of abuse.
Yeah, so this is one we'll probably talk about when we see the doc when it comes to HBO, but the Ringer just had Wesley Morris on recently. He revealed to Bill Simmons that he's seen the documentary already, yeah. And he says it's a very believable thing.
Yeah.
He says it comes off as seeming awfully credible. It just debuted at Sundance. A lot of people were outraged on it, and there's actually this segment online of Michael Jackson fans that have gone so far as to desecrate the IMDb page of this film, saying how it's a fake movie and fake accounts, it's and lies. It's not real, it's all lies. So a lot of combating stuff out there. Again,
big stories.
We're going to reserve our right to comment on that until we see it, and we'll give you our
takes. Research,
yeah.
To a degree, yeah. I mean, we're not going to be journalists and get to the bottom of
these
either.
No, of course
so
not.
We're going to watch it,
and we'll give you our takes, just like we read stuff and give you our takes, and it's up for you to draw your own conclusions from there. But if you've been listening to us for a while, we've kind of harped on the side of believe people making these accusations, and when there's smoke, that probably means there is fire. It's gross. I don't like talking about it, but we have to in cases like these, especially
yes.
when it's so prevalent.
Yes, we have to. We've covered the Hollywood news throughout the year, the last year and a half, and we will talk about it. We'll be mature enough to attack these issues as well as all the fun stuff, and we had an episode mostly filled of fun stuff for you, so... You know, there's a balance.
Yeah, and hopefully we can leave you on a light note here. Guys, we want to know your thoughts about anything that happened this week. If any story we didn't get to, you wanted us to highlight it, make sure you let us know. Reach out to us on our social media. Mike and Oscar on Facebook. Mike and Oscar on Instagram. MM and Oscar on the Twitter machine. Mike and Oscar at gmail.com and on Reddit. We're available everywhere you hear podcasts. TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, SoundCloud, iTunes, etc. Let us know your thoughts on the SAG Awards and Mike's long list of stuff that he's watched. Michael, words of wisdom, please.
You need me to give you the funniest words of wisdom ever because we just talked about the most serious thing after all the fun stuff we did, and now I'm forced to deliver serious words of wisdom that are also hilarious. This is the words of wisdom.
Oh boy.
It's impossible. Once you set that up, who's following up a rape joke
with any?
Who's following up a rape story?
With
a what? A rape joke?
Yeah. No.
Impossible.
Please don't.
Impossible. Yeah. So you can't follow up. This is what classier TV shows would just fade to black. Classier podcasts would just shut me up.
Yeah. All right. I'll step in.
Thank you.
Reality sucks. Keep watching movies with us, and we will check you out next time, guys.
See ya.